Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Top of the morning to you. This is Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White. I'm a registered Lilydale medium, and this is my weekly podcast show. And I typically have a spiritual topic that we cover relating to either spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, or more. And sometimes I have guests on the show, and sometimes I like to fly solo. And seeing as that St. Patrick's Day is just around the corner, I thought it would be great to cover a little bit about St. Patrick, especially because he did have some very interesting miracles that occurred for him. And it's fun to think about leprechauns, and it's fun to think about luck and the things that we associate with St. Patrick's Day. So get ready for a wonderful show about that very topic. Good morning, everyone. And so for those of you who are just joining me for the first time and are not familiar with Wednesdays with Willa, this is an opportunity for me to have a spiritual discussion with all of you. And today the topic will be St. Patrick. And I think it's wonderful that if we can embrace different thoughts and faiths, but it's really interesting to see how the evolution of faith happened in the world. It's something that I am a student of. I like to study where did beliefs come from and who built the beliefs and why is it that we believe the way we do now. And so seeing as how St. Patrick's Day, as I said, is right around the corner, I wanted to cover this amazing man. And you can tune in on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium, or you can also listen to the audio-only version, which is available on Lilydale Radio through blogtalkradio.com/lilydaleradio. And there are other shows that are called part of the Lilydale Radio family, so you can tune in to those. There are some great shows you can enjoy beyond just me. So I wanted to talk about St. Patrick's Day, not just because it's around the corner, but because he really did have some amazing insight that he received from God. So we're going to talk about those things today. And I just wanted to ask, how many people out there are Irish? And how many people out there are Irish wannabes? So does anybody know why you wear green on St. Patrick's Day? Other than being related to Ireland, the Ireland green, it's because if you don't, you'll get pinched by a leprechaun. So to avoid being pinched, you want to wear green for St. Patrick's Day. And there are all sorts of wonderful things going around the United States. Children are setting up little leprechaun traps. Maybe you've seen them. They try to construct these very unique leprechaun houses or traps, so they can catch a little bit of magic for the day. And I think there's nothing wrong with embracing that which has a bit of whimsy and that which really lightens the load. St. Patrick's Day falls in the middle of Lent here, so it's kind of nice for people to have permission, if they follow Lent, to whoop it up a little bit and have a bit of a feast to tide them over until Easter time. So I wanted to give you a bit of background about St. Patrick, if you don't know about him. He was born in the fourth century, and late in the fourth century, I have to say. And he was born in southwest Britain, which was on the Irish Sea. And his name was Maewyn Sucrot. And he was a Roman British citizen. His father was a councilman. He was a Roman citizen. And he was also the deacon of a Christian church. And for those of you who are familiar with how the Christian church swept up to Britain That's because of the Romans had embraced Christianity as their religion, and it was sweeping up north. And it hadn't reached Ireland yet, but it was definitely starting to establish itself more in Great Britain. And his father was a very well-to-do landowner, and he was the deacon of the church, as I said. Patrick didn't have any interest in the church at that time. He was a teenager, and he pretty much just wanted to be a teenager at that time. He didn't want to know God. He didn't really want to follow in any of that. He grew up in a very comfortable home. He always had enough food to eat, nice clothes. His father had him go to school, and he had no interest in excelling in school whatsoever. And although his father knew Latin, the language of learning, especially at the time, he had no interest in learning about Latin at all. And so he didn't study like the other kids. And when he was 16 years old, Irish pirates came, and they kidnapped him along with some other people, and they swept down the coast of Britain, and they were blowing on their bronze war trumpets. This is all described in a letter that St. Patrick wrote, and so a lot of scholars reference this letter. It's called Confessio, and it's the declaration, and it explains a bit about his biography. So they looted villages, they were killing anybody who resisted. And he was captured along with many other Britons and shipped across the Irish Sea, where he was sold into slavery. So slavery was a big thing for many, 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 many years. And all across the world, it would seem that was a big deal. You would capture people and you would sell them as slaves, and that just became their life. They had no choice about any of that. Patrick was sold to an Irish chieftain. And at the time, they were called kings, so they were the chiefs of their areas. And he was taken to the Northwest Ireland part, near the Western Sea, which is the ancient name for the Atlantic Ocean. So he was put to work on the chieftain's land. He was having to tend the sheep and the cattle at the time. And the work was so hard. I mean, we're talking the winds are blowing, they're whipping him. The weather in Ireland is fierce. And if you want to have to endure all the rain soaking, he's frozen to the bone. Quite a different life that he's experiencing in Ireland compared to what he grew up in, all that luxury, the cushiness of that. And he wasn't, thankfully, he wasn't treated harshly by his master. He even says in his letter that he was saved from all evil. And what he did while he was tending to his master's sheep and cattle, he started to have time to think, to really grow up and to reach into a mature space in himself. And he was remembering those good times he had at home and the gratitude he felt for his parents and for the luxuries, all of the things that he took for granted when he was living in Britain. And he remembered how he paid very little attention to the teachings of the church. And so he started to develop his own sense of self and sense of soul. And I find that very admirable. He was in a land that was unfamiliar to him. He was having to learn the Gaelic language, the Irish language, and he was around people who he considered having pagan customs, so it was really unfamiliar to him. So he started to fast, and he started to pray, and he started to be very deliberate in his spiritual life. He didn't have a church. He didn't have a family to fall back on. He had to do this for himself. He had to reach into the depths of himself, and he was so grateful for having had some principles that were sustaining him, that even though he hadn't paid much attention to all of those teachings when he was at home as a child, somehow, some way, that he kind of remembered, but his soul was instructing him even more along that path. And this is a quote, "The love of God came to me more and more. I would say 100 prayers during the day and almost as many at night." So he really was consciously aware of his spiritual life during those years, and he was listening so intently to his soul, so intently to God, that was his refuge in this foreign land. And I find that absolutely incredible. So many people would sink down into the depths of their despair. So many people would want to say, "Why me? Why me?" But what he did is he took it out of the "why me" and, you know, how unfair this is, and he started to reflect on what he needed to learn from that experience. I find that to be powerful. I love stories about people who have succeeded, who have grown beyond their circumstances, who embrace that it's not about what's happening to them, it's how they react to the event. And that really dictates the situation more than ever. So in the story, I don't know how familiar everybody is with St. Patrick, but in the story as it goes, he was a slave for almost 6 years when one night he heard a voice in his sleep. And the voice said, "You will soon go to your own country." And he was amazed that he was having this. So this closeness with God that he had established, he then in dream connection knew that he had felt the presence of spiritual upliftment in those times. And so often, if you look at the stories of the Bible and other scriptures, people have these instances of dreams. People have these intuitions that come to them, these revelations of the soul that sustain them through very dark times. So he was told he would go to his country again. He wished for this so much to return, right? And a few nights after that dream, he heard the voice again. And this time the voice said, "Your ship is ready." Because he knew he'd have to sail across the sea. You know, imagine you've been dreaming of going home for so long. You dealt with what you were going through. You prayed. You heard a voice in your sleep saying you're going to go to your own country. And you're like, "I have to trust in this? How am I supposed to trust in this when I am captured? I am under the thumb of this. I am a slave." And he was told his ship was ready. There are times where other people in history have felt this. I personally have felt certain things like this that have guided me and reassured me in my life. Your ship is ready. There are magical moments like this where you just know something is ready, that God's timing, that the divine right timing is so right there in that moment. And he knew that to find his ship, that he was going to have to travel to the Irish Sea, which is 200 miles away. Bit of a daunting task, I would say, 200 miles away. And he knew that he was going to have to set out to find that ship of freedom, that God's voice, the divine voice was speaking within him to tell him that he was going to be able to go home, that the ship was ready. But he had to do his part of the journey too. The ship wasn't coming across land to get him. He was going to have to put that effort, to apply the effort to get to that place and to heed the call that now was the time. Wonderful. Isn't it wonderful? The magic and majesty of these moments. So imagine that you're Patrick and you're alone in a foreign land and you feel the call to go, and you know you're going to be going through territory where there are chieftains and warlords and people who are going to attack you. And so he just spent years being a slave, known as a slave in that area, and he's having to traverse through all this mountainous land, unforgiving country. Ireland's beautiful, but it can be very unforgiving if you're trying to do things. So he set out. He had to travel at night instead of day, because, of course, he didn't want to be seen. And he had never been to this location, and he didn't know anyone. And he was absolutely sure that his master was going to send out a search party to capture him. And he had to trudge over the mountains. And he had to work his way through forests. And he had to go through the bogs and through the brambles. And things, you know, they're ripping at his arms and his legs and scratching up him, everything in his clothes. And he must have been a mess, a complete and utter mess. And he often went hungry, and he had to eat roots and berries. I mean, he's down to the nubbin here, and he's suffering many, many hardships. But he never lost hope. He knew that he was going to have victory in these moments. He really felt that God was with him on this path. And God, he says, God kept directing my path. I feared nothing. There he is, alone in the wilderness, having to eat roots and berries, getting cut up. And most people, myself included, would probably be wimping out. But he really was determined. So he gets to the shore there and into the port of the Irish Sea, and he finds that there is a boat preparing to sail. And he asks if he can go along. He approaches the captain, and the captain's very angry at him for requesting this at all. No, you can't travel with us. And he's shouting at him, and Patrick turns away, and as he's walking away, he's praying that the captain will change his mind. And he's in the depths of this prayer, you know, calling out to God with his soul to help him in this moment. And before he's even finished praying, the captain calls him back. His anger is put aside. That's incredible for someone to be that ferociously angry and shouting at someone. Patrick moves away and into prayer, and there is success in this. So the captain calls him back, and he says, we're going to set sail at once. And, you know, imagine this is your life. Imagine that this is what you've been going through, and you're finally on the ship. So they sail for 3 days, and they land on the shores of Britain. And the land is covered with thick forest. It's not like it is today, populated with lots of villages everywhere. It's a thick, dense forest that they need to get through. And the captain and the other men are with Patrick at this time, and they're wandering through the woods. And the captain is fearful that they are never going to find their way out of the woods. And don't you find all of these circumstances to be almost symbolic? Your ship is ready, you're in the woods, you're lost in the woods. There are times where we're having dark night of the soul and we feel lost in the woods and we feel like no one's going to find us. Doesn't matter how many breadcrumbs or whatever you've laid. When you are lost, it is a fearful, fearful time. So the captain is really worried because the men are suffering from hunger at this time. Many have collapsed. And the captain is pagan, according to the letter, and he asks Patrick for help. And he says, come on, Christian. He knows that Patrick is a Christian. And you say that your God is great and powerful and all that and more, and why don't you try to pray for us? And so Patrick says, let's turn in faith and pray to God and ask him to send food. So can you imagine what happens, right? I'm sure you can guess. Food arrived in the form of a herd of pigs, some wild boar. So they had abundant food from that day onward. And they rested for a few more days, and then they traveled on, and they found a village. And that's where they separated. Patrick left the men, and he continued on his journey. He knew that he was going to try to get home. And when he finally reached home, his parents embraced him. And after all of the troubles that he had experienced, his parents were earnestly requesting him never to leave again, never to go far from home again. And he felt so embraced and content and safe at home. And he was really enjoying being in the love of his people again. But then he had another dream. I'll tell you, dreams are very interesting things. Sometimes we have spirit visitation in dreams, and it can be very comforting and very loving. Sometimes dreams bring us such comfort. They tell us that something is coming to an end, that we're going to be able to return to safety or comfort. And he has a dream about a man, and I believe his name was Victoriusus or something. It's a Roman name. And he had a dream that this man was delivering letters to him. And on the one of the letters said, "Voices of the Irish." And he knew that these were letters from the people of Ireland, and that they were asking him to come back and walk among them once more. And he's like, "I have to go back to Ireland? The place where I was captive and a slave, and I'm comfortable here. Why would I want to go back and do that again or be anywhere close to it again?" It must have been really shocking to him to have this kind of dream after having successfully been rescued, as it were, and returned to the bosom of his family. So because of this dream, he really felt that he had been chosen by God and that it was to help Ireland through time, to bring God to them and bring a different understanding of religion. I'm not getting into the debate on which religion is better. I just think it's really interesting when people are called to God, because at different points people have been ordained, not necessarily in a church, but they feel ordained by God to do something. And Carolyn Mice, MYSS, I remember reading in her book one time about what it is to be ordained and how you can feel this moment where you just are in that moment of faith and trust with God, and sometimes you are given a journey that you didn't expect or a mission that you didn't expect from God. And that the first ordination has to come in that way. You go through an official, reverend, pastor, however you want to do that, but it has to be something that speaks to your very soul, that essence of you, to want to help and be of service to people in that way. And so I feel he was in that moment. And if he's there, then he has to tell his family and his friends that he feels this call. And they're like, "No, don't do it. Please stay home. Don't do it." And he knew that he needed to do this. So, I mean, he was setting aside his family. He was setting aside luxury, comfort, everything. And what he wants to do first before he goes to Ireland is he wants to train himself. So he sails across the English Channel to Gaul, which we now know as France. And he spent several years there preparing for the mission. So he didn't just, like, go to Ireland as soon as he got that message. He knew that he would kind of have to get into another place where he could be responsive and really understand the principles on a level to be able to spread Christianity, because that was what he felt ordained to do. So he spent several years doing this. He studied to become a deacon, and later he became ordained as a priest, and in time he was even made a bishop. And that was, at that point, that's when he decided that he was going to set out with a group of followers to go to Ireland. So you've got to remember, it's the 4th century, it's, it's the end of the 300s, and we're getting into the 400s, and that he was born, and so it's in the 400s AD. You can imagine what life was like, very hard at that point, but he has to go back to Ireland, where they feel that a lot of people are pagans, and they're not civilized, because Romans really believed in civilization, and everybody else was considered a barbarian. So even after all these years of study, Patrick says in his letter even that he didn't even feel well prepared for his mission. He had made efforts to be well prepared, and he still didn't feel prepared. But he knew that God was going to protect him and guide him. I mean, he had that early experience in his life as a slave and getting into that fasting and prayer mode and listening to his soul and those intuitive leads, the divine hunch to know that his ship was ready. And now he felt that he was as ready as he's ever going to be. So he goes to Ireland, and he goes everywhere. He goes, like, to the farthest districts beyond where anybody else has ever gone. He really wanted to get into all the little pockets that he possibly could. He's traveling throughout Ireland, preaching to anybody who would listen. He baptized, confirmed thousands of Irish people. He ordained priests. He helped those who wanted to become monks and wanted to become nuns. In fact, a lot of women decided to become nuns because of him. And he was actually, it became very dangerous for him to travel through Ireland. He was threatened constantly. He was imprisoned again and enslaved. He was even enslaved again at one point. And in his letter, he recounts how his enemies seized him and his companions. They wished to kill me. They took away everything they found, and they put me in irons. And on the 14th day, the Lord delivered me from their power, and our belongings were returned to us. So it's very interesting how he was in these different situations and definitely not in a friendly land to him, and he wanted to continue. And I do feel that he felt guided by God to do that, whether you want to believe or want to agree with other people's spiritual beliefs. That which has to do with your soul and the guidance of these things. And I hope and pray that when St. Patrick was doing his lectures, when he was going through Ireland preaching to people, that he went back to those early experiences that he'd had in Ireland to share with them that they could have their own connection with God. Yes, you have your priests. Yes, you have your nuns and you have your in-betweens, but you also have your own experience that you're having with God. And as a spiritualist, that is what I always try to explain to people, that that's my belief and that is what I know on a deep level, that we all have that opportunity to listen to God without our own souls, to that guidance of our inner being, that is our guidance system. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. We can take it or leave it. It's about what does God say? Is this in my highest and best good? Is this in the highest and best good of others? And we have to listen to those moments. So he stayed in Ireland for more than 30 years, and he was homesick a lot of the time. He really wanted to go back to Britain, to his fatherland, and he really tried to help people in their own faith, in his mind, the one true God, and really a loving God that he tried to convey to them, that when we give over to the divine an understanding of this, that we reach something deeper within ourselves. So he's considered the apostle of Ireland, and he really brought that work. And he is considered the patron saint of Ireland. But I think there are two others that are also patron saints of Ireland. Is it Kildare? I can't remember. But there are other patron saints of Ireland, but he's like the biggie. And there is a reason why we have the shamrock. So he originally held up a three-leaf clover, and he was trying to, as the legend goes, this was not in his letter, and scholars don't know that this is for real, but supposedly he held up the clover, and he was trying to explain to people the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, you know, and that's how he did that. But shamrocks, I was doing some reading about shamrocks. They are actually, there's medicinal use for shamrocks. They're really good for hypertension and inflammation and high in vitamin C. And so you can eat shamrocks and cows and horses eat shamrocks, and people put them on their salads, and that it was considered something that could help people and be healing properties of the shamrock. So as much as we associate shamrock with luck, a lot of that comes from the Celtic Druid understanding of having a shamrock, carrying it to ward off evil spirits and things like that. So there are reasons why we have the shamrock and why we relate that with luck too, and the leprechauns and everything that we normally associate with St. Patrick's Day, like the wearing of the green and the things that bring us joy when it comes to St. Patrick's Day. So St. Patrick actually died on March 17th. So we're having a big kind of celebration of his life every time we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And people are not quite sure what year he died. I think it's amazing that everybody's like, yes, it's absolutely March 17th that he died, but we don't know what year. So it's kind of funny how dates are when you are studying ancient history. They're like, this is our best guesstimate. This is what we can go on. And I think the thing to keep in mind is it got very tricky for the Romans because they were changing the calendar, but also there were times where they didn't keep good track of the calendar because they were in war. And so when war is on, it was really difficult for them to always be keeping track of those things. And I think that's why some pieces of history have fallen through the cracks. March 17th is the agreed upon date for St. Patrick's death. And that's why the closest that scholars seem to agree on would be the year 461 that he died. And people really do enjoy St. Patrick's Day. I think even if you don't have Irish blood in you, you still really like the concept of St. Patrick's Day. But I would hope that knowing a little bit more about the history of St. Patrick, the idea of listening to your soul, especially when you feel alone, especially when you feel that you are captured and so far that things are separating you from your family or from a success or from a victory in your life, that you can fall back on God. So I love the whimsy of St. Patrick's Day, and I hope you're understanding that I love it. It's a lot of fun. But that if you can think in terms of what is your soul guiding you to, maybe like St. Patrick, you are finding a way through your life prayer by prayer by prayer. For him, he fasted. For him, he prayed, as he said, like 100 times a day. And I find myself praying at different moments throughout the day. I don't feel that prayer only needs to be done in the morning or only needs to be done at night at bedtime. I like those two and table grace and all of that. But there are all these kinds of prayers that we can say throughout the day to help us get through the moments. The chop wood, carry water moments, the boredom, or maybe it's the destruction that might be going on in your life, or the fears. So at some point, you have to get to the depths of your being to say, I give this up to God. I may have worry. You can send all the worry prayers out you want, but they're not going to help you in your life and feeling fulfilled. They're just going to perpetuate more worry. If you say, oh, God, I'm so worried about this, and can you do this, that, and the other, and just get into that state of panic and worry, and it can be crushing. But if you move yourself into faith prayer, that's when you say, God, I recognize I'm worried about this. I give this worry up to you, and I have faith, and I trust in the journey. And it's very powerful when you do that, when you give your life over to God, especially in those moments. And there's a gratitude that can come over you, a peace that can sweep over your very being and help you to have faith in the most trying of moments. And even throughout that whole journey, the 200 miles to the Irish Sea, trying to get on that ship, trying to get through the wilds of Britain to home again, and thinking, will this never end? He really had to embrace a space of inner peace in those moments. So whatever you feel starved of, maybe it's love, attention, or health, or whatever it is, know that something better is coming, and that there is life to be had, that green is such a healing color. It's one of the colors that people associate so strongly with healing. So maybe this St. Patrick's Day, you can feel completely enveloped in whatever is the healing light for you, the spiritual healing that you're needing in that moment, mind, body, soul, to be restorative, to be something that guides you well through the vagaries of life. And if for just one day you can put that into practice, and then each day after that, know that you can be refreshed, that you have that opportunity to be guided by God, to be refreshed by God, to feed yourself that which is spiritual food in the moments that you feel most deprived. So that's what I take from St. Patrick's Day when I read about the past regarding him and the upliftment of those moments that he had. And perhaps you've had your own instances with this. Have you really felt at some moment that you were guided by God through the woods when you were lost? Have you felt guided by God through the most difficult moments? Have you let yourself be guided by God? Are you like the captain of that ship who gets off the ship and is like, I don't know what to do for my men. I don't know what to do for my family. I don't know how to guide and steer this group through the woods of this. The symbology of this is very important. I can't stress it enough. What are you going to do if you're the leader of your group? What are you going to do? You give over to God, and you wait for the next moment. And you know that through spiritual natural law, you have the law of abundance. In the case of that hurt, like that very day that they pray as a group, they decide to give that up to God. Here comes the food. Not the days prior, that day that they pray. Sometimes we have to let go and let God because we've been hitting our head up against the wall and we're just like, oh, you're trying to force your will about a situation and your head's hitting up against it and you're so frustrated and you finally just say, oh, I give this up to God. And it's amazing what happens. Sometimes it's that very day that your herd of pigs shows up, or maybe it's a few days after that. And a lot of things get cleaned up, and you almost get a little bit like, why couldn't it have happened when I wanted it to? And sometimes it's those magical moments of really building faith that we learn who we are and what we need to rely on. So know that spiritual natural law is in effect in your life and everyone's life, including St. Patrick's life. And you can choose to be a martyr in your own mind, or you can choose to have a successful experience to listen to your intuition and to the revelations of your very own soul. So I hope and pray for you that you feel the healing, restorative power of the green, of the wearing of the green this year, and that you know that you are healed and whole and complete in the mind of God, and that that is your truth, that you are a spark of the divine, and as such you have unlimited potential for love and peace and joy. And if you feel enslaved by something, you will become free. There'll be a moment of freedom, and you will have to decide whether you want to stay there where in a negative space, or at least you know what to expect, or if you're willing to follow the dictates of your soul and move beyond fears you may have into the healing space. So enjoy St. Patrick's Day coming up. Enjoy the week ahead. And thank you, everyone, for your kind attention today about St. Patrick's Day. And I just want to remind everybody that I do have classes coming up that I teach at Jamestown Community College. So if you want to come and learn in person with me, I have those dates up on my website. The first one is at the end of April, and it's about angels and walking with angels and knowing how to connect with angels. It's a hands-on activity kind of class where you'll be have the opportunity to connect with your angels and see what they want to say to you. And then the next two classes have to do with auras, of understanding how to sense auras, and then understand the aura. The second class would be of auras is advanced auras, so we start to understand the depth and breadth of auras and more advanced concepts regarding auras. So if you're able to join me for those classes, please do. And as always, tune in next week on Wednesdays with Willa. Have a beautiful, wonderful St. Patrick's Day, everyone. Bye-bye.